to Lyme to be with Louisa after the accident.
Well, I suppose I wish them happy. But no more of them. I must call on Mrs. Croft at Kellynch. Have you the courage to go with me?
I do not shrink from it. I must confess, my father is very fortunate indeed in his tenants.
Well, I shall soon see all of that for myself. By the way, from where do you receive the notes about Louisa's welfare?
I really do not know. The notes have simply been left for me.
Captain Wentworth lately, Mrs. Croft?
Yes. My brother brought news of Louisa yesterday at noon, stayed for a few hours, and then returned to Lyme without any present intention of quitting it any more.
It was at 9:30 that I received the last note about Louisa.
Captain Wentworth expressed his hope of you not being the worse for your exertions.
Thank you, Admiral Croft.
I wonder how long Louisa is liable to suffer from the concussion.
A new sort of way, this, for a young fella to be making love by breaking his mistress's head.
Admiral, my dear.
Now, this must be very bad for you, Miss Elliot, to be coming and finding us living in your father's house. But now, do not stand upon ceremony. Get up and go over all the rooms, if you like to.
Another time, sir. I thank you, but
well,
not now.
You can slip in from the shrubbery at any time. We've made very few changes. I've done very little, besides sending away some of the large looking glasses from my dressing room, which was your father's.
Sir Walter was very fond of those looking glasses.
I should think, Miss Elliot, he must be a rather dressy man for his time of life. Such a number of looking glasses.
I believe you have the measure of my father, sir.
So, I got Sophia to lend me a hand, and we soon shifted their quarters.
The next news Anne and Lady Russell received of Louisa's welfare was from Mary on her return to Uppercross.
Louisa is quite well. We left her beginning to sit up.
How is her head?
Oh, it is clear, but exceedingly weak. And her nerves are susceptible to the highest extreme of tenderness. Are they not, Charles?
She's certainly doing very well.
Oh, it is still impossible to say when she might be able to bear the removal home. Her mother and father will return in time to receive their younger children for the Christmas holidays. But they have hardly a hope of being allowed to bring her with them.
And how about you, Mary?
Oh, on the whole, I found more to enjoy than to suffer. I went to Charmouth. I bathed. I went to church. And there were a great many more people to look at in the church at Lyme than at Uppercross. And I really was so very useful. It was a most agreeable fortnight.
And Captain Benwick?
Oh, dear.
Captain Benwick is very well, I believe. We asked him to come home with us to give him some shooting.
He seemed quite delighted. But on Tuesday night he made a very awkward excuse. He never shot, he said. I suppose he was afraid of finding it dull.
Now, Mary, you know very well how it was. It was all your doing, Anne. He fancied that if he went with us, he should find you close by.
I do not consider that Captain Benwick is entitled either by birth or situation to be in love with an Elliot.
He talks of you in such terms.
I declare, Charles, I never heard him mention Anne twice all the time I was there.
Now, Mary, I declare it was so. Elegance, sweetness and beauty. Oh, there was no end of Miss Elliot's charms.
And I'm sure that it was very little to his credit if he did. Miss Harville only died last June. Such a heart is very little worth having, is it, Lady Russell?
I'm afraid I must see Captain Benwick before I decide.
Oh, and that you're very likely to do soon. He will make his way over to Kellynch one day by himself, you may depend upon it. I told him the church was well worth seeing.
Any acquaintance of Anne's will always be welcome to me.
I think he is rather my acquaintance, for I have been seeing him every day this last fortnight.
Well, as your joint acquaintance, then, I shall be very happy to see Captain Benwick.
I assure you, ma'am, he is one of the dullest young men that ever lived.
I think Lady Russell will like him.
Oh, he's just Lady Russell's sort. Give him a book and he will read all day long.
Yes, that he will. He will sit poring over his book and not know when one drops one's scissors. However, we did see someone far more interesting.
And who is that?
Why, Mr. Walter Elliot, my father's heir.
He is a man whom I have no wish to see. His declining to be on cordial terms with the head of his family has left a very strong impression in his disfavour with me.
Oh, but Lady Russell...
And how is Captain Wentworth?
As Louisa has improved, he has improved. He is now quite a different creature.
He has not seen Louisa. He was so fearful of any ill consequence to her from an interview that he has not pressed for it at all.
He has talked of going down to Shropshire to visit his brother.
Anne put away any thought of seeing Captain Wentworth again, and before long it was time for her to travel to Bath with Lady Russell. They entered Bath on a wet afternoon, driving through the streets amidst the dash of other carriages, the heavy rumble of carts and drays, the shouting of newsmen, muffin men and milkmen.
These are noises which belong to the winter pleasures. My spirits rise under their influence.
I'm afraid I do not share these feelings.
I wish you would not persist in your determined disinclination for Bath. The place is so full of people.
But who is glad to see me? I look back with fond regret to the bustles of Uppercross and the seclusion of Kellynch. There is someone, I suppose.
Oh? And who is that?
I have heard that Mr. Elliot is in Bath.
Indeed.
He called in Camden Place and was pointedly attentive. Elizabeth writes that he has been taking as much pains to seek their acquaintance as he formerly took pains to show neglect.
Well, this news puts me in a very agreeable state of curiosity about Mr. Elliot. If he really seeks to reconcile himself like a dutiful branch, he must be forgiven for having dismembered himself from the paternal tree.
I do not see it at quite the pitch of solemnity you do, Lady Russell. But I must confess that I would rather see Mr. Elliot again than not. Which is more than I can say for many other persons in Bath.
We have arrived in Camden Place, Anne.
Sir Walter had taken a very good house in Camden Place. A lofty, dignified situation, such as became a man of consequence. And both he and Elizabeth were settled there, much to their satisfaction. Anne entered the house with a sinking heart, anticipating an imprisonment of many months.
My dear Anne.
Father.
How good to see you.
Welcome, Anne. Mrs. Clare and I have talked of nothing but your arrival for a full hour this morning, have we not, Mrs. Clare?
Oh, yes, indeed.
This house is undoubtedly the best in Camden Place.
Our acquaintance is exceedingly sought after.
Everybody wants to visit us.
We are still perpetually having cards by people of whom we know nothing.
Can you wonder, Anne, that we are so happy here?
She might not wonder, but she must sigh that her father should find so much to be vain of in the littleness of the town.
Here, Anne, we can throw open the folding doors and walk from one drawing room through to the other.
Kellynch Hall was somewhat larger.
There is a full 30 feet between these two walls. One has to raise one's voice to be heard at the other end of the drawing rooms. And, my dear Anne, we have something else. We have Mr. Elliot.
Is Mr. Elliot now pardoned for his past behaviour?
Oh, yes. He is most certainly pardoned, and we are absolutely delighted with him.
He called on us, and was so ready to apologise for the past, and had such solicitude to be received as a relation again, that our former good understanding was completely re-established.
And what are the circumstances of his marriage?
I am assured of her having been a very fine woman, with a large fortune, in love with him. This must count as a complete apology for his having neglected Elizabeth.
Well, I cannot see the circumstance in quite so favourable light, but I do allow it to be a great extenuation.
He is delighted, in short, by every proof of cousinly notice, and places his whole happiness in being on intimate terms in Camden Place.
I do believe he has a further interest in calling here.
And what is that, Mrs. Clay?
Well, I do not wish to say too much, but there is a certain young person here.
Oh, Mrs. Clay, really?
I have noticed the way he looks at you when he calls, Miss Elizabeth. You shall meet him soon, Miss Anne.
I do believe I may have glimpsed him at Lyme. He was tall and...
Mr. Elliot is a most gentlemanlike appearance. He has an air of elegance and fashion, and a good-shaped face, a sensible eye. Mr. Elliot is better to look at than most men, and I have no objection to being seen with him anywhere.
He is staying with the Colonel and Mrs. Wallace. She is in daily expectation of her confinement.
Mrs. Wallace is said to be an excessively pretty woman, quite beautiful.
I long to see her. I hoped she might make some amends for the very many plain faces I am continually passing on the street.
Bath, Father?
The worst of Bath is the number of its plain women.
Once, as I stood in a shop in Bond Street, I counted 87 women go by, one after another, without there being a tolerable face among them.
And the men, Father?
Oh, the men are infinitely worse. Such scarecrows as the streets are full of. It is evident how little the women are used to the sight of anything tolerable by the effect which a man of decent appearance produces.
Oh, Sir Walter, you must not be too modest about yourself.
As you wish, Mrs. Clay. How is Mary looking, my dear Anne? The last time I saw her, she had a red nose.
That must have been quite accidental. She has been in good health and very good looks since Michaelmas.
If I thought it would not tempt her to go out in sharp winds and grow coarse, I would send her a new hat and pelisse.
Well, perhaps a gown or a cap would not be liable to any such misuse.
Oh, knock at the door. Are we expecting anyone, Elizabeth?
Perhaps it is Mr. Elliot. It is decidedly Mr. Elliot's knock.
It was the same, the very same man.
My dear friends, I could not be so near without wishing to know that both you, Miss Elliot, and your friend, Mrs. Clay, were well.
It is so kind of you.
So kind of you to call.
Mr. Elliot, my youngest daughter has come to stay with us in Bath. Do give me leave to present to you my youngest daughter, Anne.
Well, I do believe I should be received as an acquaintance already.
How is that?
I did tell you, Papa, that I thought I had seen Mr. Elliot very fleetingly at Lyme.
Indeed, we passed one another on the steps down to the cop.
He's quite as good-looking as he appeared at Lyme.
Do sit down with us, Mr. Elliot.
Thank you very much, Sir Walter. Miss Anne, have you been back to Lyme since I saw you there?
I have not, Mr. Elliot. I believe that we happened to be guests at the same inn at the same time. We saw you from the window.
We?
Myself and my family. We were there on what began as a happy visit to Lyme, but ended, sadly, with an accident to one of our party.
I'm sad to hear that. I do believe I must have spent my entire solitary evening in the room adjoining yours. I heard voices and mirth continually, and thought you must be the most delightful set of people. If I had but asked who the party were, the name of Musgrove would have told me quite enough.
I wish that you had, Mr. Elliot.
Well, it'll serve to cure me of the absurd practice of never asking a question at an inn. I hope I shall be able to hear the account of the accident from you at greater length.
Indeed. I hope so too, Mr. Elliot.
I did see you at Lyme, Miss Elliot, did I not?
And Anne remembered another person's look also.
Ah, Anne, may I compliment you on your improved looks? I think you are less thin in your person, in your cheeks. Your skin, your complexion is greatly improved. Have you been using anything in particular?
No, nothing at all.
Oh, I'm surprised at that. Mrs. Clay has been using a preparation at my recommendation, and you see how it has carried away her freckles.
Indeed it has, Sir Walter.
Oh, do look here, Mr. Elliot. The Bath paper has announced the arrival of our cousins, the Dowager Countess Dalrymple, and her daughter, the Honourable Miss Carteret. We must introduce ourselves.
But how?
How to introduce ourselves properly to the nobility.
I do wish Elizabeth and my father had more pride.
I was once in company with the late Viscount, but I've never seen the rest of the family. Has there been any correspondence between
them? I recall now there has been a suspension of all intercourse by letters of ceremony ever since the death of the late Viscount. In consequence of a dangerous illness of my own, I was unable to send a letter of condolence. The family, in turn, neglected the death of my own dear wife.
How can you set this anxious business to rights?
Where is Lady Dalrymple staying?
In Laura Place. She'll be living in style.
Family connections are always worth preserving. Good company always worth seeking.
It is very desirable that the connection should be renewed, if it can be done without any compromise of propriety on the side of the Elliots.
I do believe it is most appropriate for me to write a letter, a very fine letter, with ample explanation.
Not too ample, my dear father.
Ample explanation, regret and entreaty to my right honourable cousin.
The letter did all that was wanted in bringing three lines from the Dowager Countess. The toils of the business were over, the sweets began. Had Lady Dalrymple and her daughter even been very agreeable, I would still have been ashamed of the agitation they create. But they are nothing. There is no superiority of manner, accomplishment, or understanding.
Lady Dalrymple had acquired the name of a charming woman.
Because she has a smile and a civil answer for everybody.
Miss Carteret couldn't offend with what she said.
She is so plain and so awkward that she would never have been tolerated in Camden Place but for her birth.
Our cousins in Laura Place.
Our cousins, Lady Dalrymple and Miss Carteret.
I must confess I had expected something better. But you must admit, Anne, that it is an acquaintance worth having.
Surely you will agree with me, Mr. Elliot.
Oh, I do agree that they are nothing in themselves. But I still maintain that as a family connection and good company, they have their value.
My idea of good company, Mr. Elliot, is the company of clever, well-informed people.
You are mistaken. That is not good company, that is the best. Good company requires only birth, education, and manners.
Well, perhaps I am not interested in good company.
My dear cousin, you have a better right to be fastidious than almost any other woman I know, but will it answer? Will it make you happy?
That I cannot tell you.
Will it not be wiser to accept the society of those good ladies in Laura Place?
I cannot see why.
You may depend upon it they will move in the first set in Bath this winter, and as rank is rank, your being known to be related to them will have its use.
Well, I certainly am too proud to enjoy a welcome which depends so entirely upon place.
I love your indignation. It is very natural. But here you are in Bath, and the object is to be established here with all the credit and dignity which ought to belong to Sir Walter Elliot. Such would be my aim.
So you think we are alike?
In one point, my dear cousin, we must feel alike. Every addition to your father's society amongst his equals and superiors may be of use in diverting his thoughts from those who are beneath him.
You are referring to Mrs. Clay.
I have looked in her direction, yes.
You are correct in assuming that this is one point in which we do feel alike.
As Mr. Elliot became known to Anne, she grew more charitable, or more indifferent, towards the others. His manners were an immediate recommendation.
He is steady, observant, moderate, candid.
And yet with a sensibility to what is amiable and lovely, and a value for all the felicities of domestic life. Even Lady Russell added her approval.
I cannot seriously picture to myself a more agreeable or estimable man.
Oh, I concur in that opinion, Lady Russell.
Everything unites in him. Good understanding, correct opinions, knowledge of the world, and a warm heart. He has strong feelings of family attachment and family honour without pride or weakness. I'm sure he was not happy in marriage.
It does not surprise me, Lady Russell, that you should see nothing to require more motives than appear in Mr. Elliot's great desire of a reconciliation.
In my view, it is perfectly natural that Mr. Elliot, at a mature time of life, should feel it desirable to be on good terms with the head of his family.
Well, I still smile about the opinion.
What else can there possibly be?
Why, Lady Russell, Elizabeth.
Elizabeth? Of course, Elizabeth must be first. Well, time will tell. However it might end, he is without question our pleasantest acquaintance in Bath.
While Sir Walter and Elizabeth were assiduously pushing their good fortune in Laura Place, Anne was renewing an acquaintance of a very different description. She had received news that a former school friend, a Miss Hamilton, now Mrs. Smith, was in Bath.
Is this all you have, Mrs. Smith?
Oh, a noisy parlour and a dark bedroom behind.
Have you no help at all?
There is one servant who will help me now and again.
And do you never quit the house?
Oh, only very occasionally, to be conveyed into the warm bath, to ease the rheumatic fever.
Are you not very low in spirits?
Oh, at moments. But I find great comfort in the visit of anyone. You are the choicest gift of heaven to me.
Was there no time when your spirits failed?
Oh, indeed there was. I could not call myself an invalid now, compared with my state on first reaching Bath. But my landlady's sister was a nurse by profession, and by sheer chance she was at liberty just in time to attend me. She has proved invaluable.
In what way?
She taught me to knit, and she put me in the way of making little thread cases, pincushions and card racks to sell.
I hope I shall have the pleasure of meeting her.
Call it gossip, if you will. But when Nurse Rook has half an hour's leisure to bestow on me, she is sure to have something to relate that is entertaining and profitable. But I do not suppose the situation she is in at present will furnish much to interest me. She is nursing Mrs. Wallace of Marlborough Buildings.
Mrs. Wallace? Indeed.
Yes, a mere pretty, silly, fashionable woman, I believe. However, she has plenty of money, and I intend she should buy all the high-priced things I have in hand now.
Anne was refreshed and made thoughtful by this new old acquaintance.
Anne, you are coming with us this evening.
Where to, Elizabeth?
Why, to Lady Dalrymple's. We have received a sudden invitation from Laura Place for this evening.
I did not know that.
I'm sure Mrs. Clay would have told you.
I'm afraid she did not.
But no matter. You shall come with us this evening anyway.
I cannot.
Cannot?
I'm already engaged.
But how can you possibly be engaged?
I'm spending the evening in Westgate Buildings.
And who is Miss Anne Elliot to be visiting in Westgate Buildings?
An old schoolfellow, Father, a Mrs. Smith.
A Mrs. Smith? Who is Mr. Smith, pray?
There is no Mr. Smith.
A widow, Mrs. Smith? Who was the husband? One of the 5,000 Mr. Smiths whose names are to be met with everywhere?
This is a very particular Mrs. Smith.
What is her attraction? That she is old and sickly?
Not exactly, Father.
Upon my word, Miss Anne Elliot, you have the most extraordinary taste. Everything that revolts other people, low company, paltry rooms, foul air, disgusting associations, are inviting to you.
I would not describe her abode in that fashion, Father.
But sure, you may put off this old lady till tomorrow.
Sir, she is not 31. I do not think I can put off my engagement.
I cannot see why.
She goes into the warm bath tomorrow, and for the rest of the week, you know, we are engaged.
You have called on Mrs. Smith before?
A number of times, sir.
Westgate Buildings must have been rather surprised by the appearance of a carriage drawn up near its pavement.
I do not think anybody remarked upon it.
A mere Mrs. Smith. An everyday Mrs. Smith. Of all the people and all the names in the world to be chosen friend of Miss Anne Elliot and to be preferred by her to her own family connections among the nobility of England and Ireland, Mrs. Smith.
I could refrain from saying that Mrs. Smith is not the only widow in Bath between 30 and 40 who has little to live on and no surname of dignity.
I know of no other.
Well, perhaps Elizabeth does.
Who can you mean?
Someone who lives under this very roof with us, against whom no one raises any kind of objection.
You mean Mrs. Clay?
Oh, Mrs. Clay is entirely different. Mrs. Clay is no Mrs. Smith. Eh, Elizabeth?
Indeed, no, Father.
Then I shall keep my appointment, and you may keep yours.
Elizabeth made sure that Anne was fully informed of what she had missed.
My only regret, Lady Russell, was that I was not there to hear your conversation with Mr. Elliot.
Mr. Elliot was quite delighted in your compassionate visits to your old schoolfellow. He thinks you a most extraordinary young woman and a model of female excellence. We met evenly in a discussion of your merits.
You flatter me, Lady Russell.
You must know yourself to be highly rated by a sensible man, my dear Anne. I am as much convinced of his meaning to gain you in time as of his deserving you.
Oh, Lady Russell.
I am no matchmaker, as you well know.
Then perhaps you should not speculate.
I only mean that if Mr. Elliot should pay his addresses to you, and if you should be disposed to accept him, I think there would be every possibility of your being happy together.
You think so?
A most suitable connection, and I think it might be a very happy one.
Mr. Elliot is an exceedingly agreeable man, but I fear we should not suit.
To be able to regard you as the future mistress of Kellynch, to see you occupying your dear mother's place would be the highest possible gratification to me.
You're so kind to me, Lady Russell.
You are your mother's self in countenance and disposition.
Oh, Lady Russell,
I cannot speak.
For a few moments, her imagination and her heart were bewitched.
The idea of becoming what my mother was.
Of having the precious name of Lady Elliot first revived in herself.
Of being restored to Kellynch. Calling it my home again. My home forever.
This was a charm that Anne could not immediately resist.
I shall say not another word, Anne. I do believe that Mr. Elliot can speak for himself.
The image of Mr. Elliot speaking for himself brought Anne to composure again. The charm of Kellynch and of Lady Elliot all faded away.
I never could accept him.
It was not only that her feelings were adverse to any man save one.
My judgment is against Mr. Elliot.
But I cannot see why. You have been acquainted with him for some time.
Nearly a month. And I cannot be satisfied that I really know his character.
But you will admit that he is a sensible and agreeable man.
Oh, he talks well, he professes good opinions, he seems to judge properly, and is a man of principle. This is all clear enough.
Then in what way has he transgressed?
I cannot fix on any one article. Yet, for some reason, I would be afraid to answer for his conduct. I distrust the past, if not the present.
In what respect the past? His wife?
No. No, it is the names which occasionally drop of former associates, former practices and pursuits. I think there have been some bad habits. That Sunday travelling has been a common thing.
But you will own that he is rational, discreet, polished?
Yes, but he is not open. There is never any burst of feeling, any warmth of indignation or delight at the evil or good of others.
What is it you prize, then?
The frank, open-hearted, eager character beyond all others. Warmth and enthusiasm captivate me still. I feel I can so much more depend upon the sincerity of someone who may say a careless or a hasty thing than of someone whose presence of mind never varies, whose tongue never slips.
Do you have someone else in mind?
Perhaps. Indeed, as I think about it, Mr. Elliot is too generally agreeable. He stands too well with everybody. Take Mrs. Clay, for instance.
Mrs. Clay?
He has spoken to me with some degree of openness of Mrs. Clay, has appeared completely to see what Mrs. Clay is about and to hold her in contempt. And yet Mrs. Clay finds him as agreeable as anybody.
Well, my dear young friend, I see either less or more than you. But I see nothing to excite distrust. I cannot imagine a man more exactly what he ought to be than Mr. Elliot. Nor have I ever enjoyed a sweeter feeling than the hope of seeing him receive the hand of my beloved Anne in Kellynch Church in the course of the coming autumn.
We shall see, Lady Russell.
It was the beginning of February, and Anne, having been a month in Bath, was growing very eager for news from Uppercross and Lyme. One evening, a thicker letter than usual from Mary was delivered to her, with Admiral and Mrs. Croft's compliments.
Oh, the Crofts must be in Bath.
The Crofts who rent Kellynch?
Yes, Father.
I shall visit Admiral Croft. I know what is due to my tenant.
While Sir Walter hastened to inform Elizabeth, Anne settled to read her letter.
My dear Anne, we have had a very dull Christmas. Mr. and Mrs. Musgrove have not had one dinner party all the holiday.
Oh, dear, dear Mary.
The holidays, however, are over at last. I have not had a creature call on me since the second week in January. I am sorry to say that I am very far from well. Jemima tells me that the butcher says there is a bad sore throat very much about. I dare say I shall catch it. And my sore throats are always worse than anybody's. Now for Louisa. Captain Benwick is in love with her. It was all settled in Lyme, true upon my honour.
Louisa and Captain Benwick?
We are all very pleased, although it is not equal to her marrying Captain Wentworth. And this is the end, you see, of Captain Benwick supposed to be an admirer of yours.
Captain Benwick and Louisa Musgrove? It is almost too wonderful for belief. The high-spirited, joyous, talking Louisa Musgrove and the dejected, thinking, feeling, reading Captain Benwick? Most dissimilar.
Where could have been the attraction?
and must have been in situation. They had been thrown together several weeks, living in the same small family party. Since Henrietta's coming away, they must have been depending almost entirely on each other. Louisa just recovering from illness, and Captain Benwick not inconsolable.
And Captain Benwick's tenderness towards Anne Elliot?
I am persuaded that any tolerably pleasing young woman would have received the same compliment. He has an affectionate heart.
Anne saw no reason against their being happy.
He will gain cheerfulness, and she will learn to be an enthusiast for Scott and Lord Byron.
The idea of Louisa Musgrove turning into a person of literary taste and sentimental reflection was amusing.
The day at Lyme, the fall from the cob, might influence her health, her nerves, her courage, her character. If Captain Wentworth has lost no friend by this, then there is nothing to be regretted.
It was not regret that made Anne's heart beat in spite of herself, and brought the colour into her cheeks when she thought of Captain Wentworth unshackled and free. She had feelings which she was ashamed to investigate. They were too much like joy. Senseless joy.
In part two of Persuasion by Jane Austen, Anne Elliot was Juliet Stevenson, Captain Wentworth, Tim Brierley, and Jane Austen, Sirica Cusack. Mary Musgrove was Catherine Herbert, Sir Walter Elliot, Roger Hume, and Lady Russell, Patricia Gallimore. Charles Musgrove was Alistair Cameron, Henrietta Musgrove, Alison Dowling, and Louisa Musgrove, Jane Dahl. Elizabeth Elliot was Claire Falconbridge, Mrs. Musgrove, Sheila Grant, and Mr. Elliot, Peter Harlow. Mrs. Clay was Hedley Nicklow, Admiral Croft, Geoffrey Dench, and Sophia Croft, Tina Gray. Captain Benwick was Tony Turner, Captain Harville, Paul Alexander, and Mrs. Smith, Carol Boyd. The square piano was played by Kenneth Mobbs. Persuasion has been dramatised for radio by Micheline Wandor and was directed at Pebble Mill by Vanessa Whitburn. Persuasion by Jane Austen. Dramatised for radio in three parts by Micheline Wandor, with Juliet Stevenson as Anne Elliot, Tim Brierley as Captain Wentworth, and Sirica Cusack as Jane Austen. Part 3, Friendly Persuasion.
Upon learning that Louisa Musgrove has become engaged to Captain Benwick, Anne Elliot dares to hope that Captain Wentworth's affections might once again be hers. One morning, Anne, her sister Elizabeth, and Mrs. Clay were accompanied on their walk past the shops by their cousin, Mr. Elliot.
Oh, dear, I do believe it is beginning to rain.
It is not very much, Mrs. Clay.
It is quite enough for me, Mr. Elliot. You cannot like the rain, Miss Elliot.
Indeed not.
Come, let us turn into Mullins and we can shelter in the shop.
Oh, wait a moment. Is that not Lady Dalrymple's carriage waiting at a little distance from us?
Oh, why, yes, I do believe it is.
I shall step to Lady Dalrymple to request her assistance.
Let us enter the shop, meanwhile.
I'm afraid there will not be room for all three of us in the carriage.
The rain is a mere trifle. I shall be perfectly happy in walking with Mr. Elliot.
Oh, no, no. The rain is also a mere trifle to me. I can hardly allow it even to drop at all. I shall walk with Mr. Elliot.
No, really. I really do not mind at all, Mrs. Clay.
I'm quite as anxious to be left to walk with Mr. Elliot as you could be, Miss Anne.
Surely you would prefer to ride with Elizabeth in the carriage to continue your conversation.
Oh, Miss Elliot and I have all afternoon to converse.
I've been successful. Lady Dalrymple will be most happy to take you all home and will call for you in a few minutes.
I shall walk with you, Mr. Elliot.
Oh, no, no, I shall. I insist.
I do consider that my cousin Anne's boots are rather the thickest of the two.
It is fixed then, Mrs. Clay. You shall be at the party in the carriage with me.
They had just reached this point when Anne spied, most decidedly and distinctly, Captain Wentworth walking down the street.
Excuse me, I must go to the door to see if it's still raining.
Of course it's still raining, Anne.
Anne wanted to see if it rained. Why was she to suspect herself of another motive? Captain Wentworth must now be out of sight. But she would go. At that moment, Captain Wentworth himself entered the shop.
Good day, Miss Elliot.
Time has changed him.
Or Louisa has changed him.
He has seen Elizabeth. She has seen him.
And she had the pain of seeing her sister turn away with unalterable coldness.
There is Lady Dalrymple's carriage.
And it is beginning to rain again.
Mrs. Clay, Miss Elizabeth, I will accompany you to the carriage.
Miss Elliot, are you going in the carriage with Lady Dalrymple and your sister?
Well, sir...
May I offer my services to you, to walk you to the carriage?
I'm very much obliged to you, but I'm not going with them. The carriage would not accommodate so many.
And how are you to return home?
I walk. I prefer walking.
But it rains.
Oh, very little. Nothing that I regard.
Though I came only yesterday, I have equipped myself properly for Bath already, you see, with a new umbrella.
Indeed. I see, Captain Wentworth.
I wish you would make use of it if you are determined to walk.
I am very much obliged to you, but I must decline.
Are you not perturbed by the rain?
I'm convinced that the rain will come to nothing. I'm only waiting for Mr. Elliot. He will be here in a moment, I'm sure.
Ah, you are to walk with Mr. Elliot.
I am, indeed.
Forgive me, Miss Anne. I apologize for having kept you waiting.
It was not long, Mr. Elliot.
Are you ready to leave?
Certainly. Shall we go?
Anne had never found it so difficult to listen to her cousin. She could think only of Captain Wentworth.
I wonder how long he means to be in Bath.
He might only be passing through.
It is more probable that he should have come to stay.
In that case, Lady Russell would in all likelihood see him somewhere. Would she recollect him? The next day, Anne was walking with her friend when she distinguished Captain Wentworth at a distance.
I wonder if Lady Russell has noticed him. Oh, I dare not look. Ah, she has seen him.
You will wonder what has been fixing my eyes so long, Anne. I am looking after some particular window curtains, but I confess I cannot see them in any shop.
Anne sighed and blushed and smiled in pity and disdain, either at her friend or herself. The part which provoked her most was that she should have lost the right moment for seeing whether Captain Wentworth saw them. A day or two passed without producing anything. The theatre, or the rooms where he was most likely to be, were not fashionable enough for the Elliots. Anne waited impatiently for a concert evening patronised by Lady Dalrymple.
Captain Wentworth is very fond of music. If I could only have a few minutes' conversation with him again, I fancy I shall be satisfied. Elizabeth has turned from him. Lady Russell has overlooked him. I feel that I owe him attention.
Sir Walter, his two daughters, and Mrs. Clay were the earliest of all their party at the rooms in the evening. And as Lady Dalrymple must be waited for, they took their station by one of the fires in the octagon room.
Why, who is this coming in? Captain Wentworth, I do believe.
On Captain Wentworth's making a distant bow, Anne saw her father give him a simple acknowledgement of acquaintance, and even a slight curtsy from Elizabeth herself. Her spirits improved.
Good evening, Captain Wentworth.
Miss Elliot.
And how do you do?
Well, I am pleased to say. I have hardly seen you since our day at Lyme. I'm afraid you must have suffered from the shock.
No, indeed, I did not.
When you had the presence of mind to suggest that Bennick would be the properest person to fetch a surgeon, you could have little idea of his being one of those most concerned in Louisa's recovery.
I hope it will be a happy match.
All is very much in favour of their happiness. More than, perhaps.
Perhaps, Captain Wentworth?
A sudden recollection seemed to occur, and to give him some taste of that emotion that was reddening Anne's cheeks and fixing her eyes on the ground.
I regard Louisa Musgrove as a very amiable, sweet-tempered girl. But Bennick is something more. He is a clever man, a reading man, and I confess, I do consider his attaching himself to her with some surprise.
I thought him a clever man myself.
Fanny Harville was a very superior creature. A man does not recover from such a devotion of the heart to such a woman. He ought not. He does not.
You were a good while at Lyme, I think.
I could not leave it till Louisa's doing well was quite ascertained. She would not have been obstinate had I not been weak.
Oh, I'm sure you should not blame yourself entirely, Captain Wentworth. I should very much like to see Lyme again. I have travelled so little and there is real beauty at Lyme.
Lady Dalrymple, delighted to see you.
Anne was soon divided from Captain Wentworth. Their interesting conversation must be broken up for a time.
I have learned in the last 10 minutes more of his feelings towards Louisa, more of all his feelings, than I dare think of.
And she gave herself up to the demands of the party, to the need for the civilities of the moment, with exquisite, though agitated, sensations.
Lady Dalrymple, how are you?
The delightful emotions were a little subdued when she saw that Captain Wentworth was gone. She was just in time to see him turn into the concert room.
Oh, dear. But we shall meet again. He will find me out before the evening is over.
Anne, my dear, I've been looking for you everywhere. Come, we're all collecting to proceed into the concert room.
See how Mrs. Clay dotes on Lady Dalrymple and Miss Carteret. And Elizabeth, arm in arm with Miss Carteret.
But it would be an insult to the nature of Anne's felicity to draw any comparison between it and her sister's. Her happiness was from within. Her eyes were bright. Her cheeks glowed.
Come, Anne. We can sit here. We have an excellent view of the musicians.
Thank you, Lady Russell.
Miss Anne, will you share my concert bill with me?
Delighted, Mr. Elliot.
I see, Miss Anne, there's to be an Italian song.
Oh, yes. So I see.
Do you speak Italian?
Oh, a little.
Then perhaps you'll explain the meaning of the words to me.
I shall write it for you, Mr. Elliot. But I'm afraid I'm a very poor Italian scholar.
Yes, I see you are. You've only knowledge enough of the language to translate it sight the Italian lines into clear, comprehensible, elegant English.
I do assure you that I am ignorant.
You need not say anything more of your ignorance. Here is complete proof.
I will not oppose such kind politeness.
Visiting in Camden Place so long without knowing something of Miss Anne Elliot. And I do regard her as one who is too modest with the world in general to be aware of half her accomplishments.
This is too much of flattery, Mr. Elliot.
Perhaps I've had a longer acquaintance with your character than you were aware of.
How so?
I knew you by report long before you came to Bath.
I must confess that you arouse my interest, Mr. Elliot. Who has spoken of me?
The name of Anne Elliot has long had an interesting sound to me. And if I dared, I would breathe my wishes that the name might never change.
Mr. Elliot.
A well-looking man. A very well-looking man. A bowing acquaintance. Wentworth. Captain Wentworth of the Navy. His sister married my tenant in Somersetshire.
There he is.
As her eyes fell on him, his seemed to be withdrawn from her. When she could give another glance, he had moved away.
Miss Anne.
Yes, Mr. Elliot?
Miss Carteret has beckoned to me. Would you excuse me?
Certainly. My dear Anne, have you seen Captain Wentworth?
Captain Wentworth? Why, well, Lady Russell, I did not know he was here.
The colour in her cheek said yes, even though her words said no. The room filled, benches were reclaimed and repossessed. Another hour of pleasure, or penance, was to be set out. Another hour of music.
What is your opinion of the concert, Miss Anne?
I have listened to some of it with interest.
I am myself somewhat disappointed.
In what way?
I expected better singing. I must confess I shall not be sorry when it is over.
And yet the musicians are playing with spirit.
Yes, that is true. Is this place on the bench vacant?
Indeed, Captain Wentworth.
Oh, Miss Anne, I do beg your pardon. There's another Italian song. Would you explain it to me? Miss Carteret's very anxious to have a general idea of what is next to this song.
Why, of course, Mr. Elliot.
Never had she sacrificed to politeness with a more suffering spirit.
Pardon me, Miss Anne. I must wish you good night. I must be going.
Is not the song worth staying for?
No. There is nothing worth my staying for. Goodbye.
Jealousy of Mr. Elliot. Captain Wentworth is jealous of my affections. I could not have believed it 3 hours ago.
For a moment, the gratification was exquisite.
But how is such jealousy to be quieted? How is the truth to reach him? It is a misery to think of Mr. Elliot's attentions.
How might Anne have felt had there been no Captain Wentworth in the case?
But there is a Captain Wentworth. And be the conclusion of the present suspense, good or bad, my affection will be his forever.
Prettier musings of high-wrought love and eternal constancy could never have passed along the streets of Bath. It was almost enough to spread purification and perfume all the way, as Anne went the following morning to visit her old friend, Mrs. Smith.
My dear Anne, I can see by your animated features that the concert was most enjoyable.
Oh, indeed it was.
And who was there?
I really cannot say, apart from our party.
Your countenance informs me that you were in company last night with a person you think the most agreeable in the world.
You penetrate my thoughts so well.
Pray, does Mr. Elliot know that I am in Bath?
You are acquainted with Mr. Elliot?
I have been a good deal acquainted with Mr. Elliot.
Oh, you never mentioned it before.
I want you to talk about me to Mr. Elliot. He can be of essential service to me.
I should be extremely happy. As Mr. Elliot's relation, I beg you would not hesitate to employ me.
Oh, I beg your pardon. I ought to have waited for official information.
Official information?
But now, my dear Miss Elliot, as an old friend, do give me a hint as to when I may speak.
Speak about what? Oh, I see. I am not going to marry Mr. Elliot, Mrs. Smith.
But I thought...
I should like to know why you imagine I am.
Why should you be so cruel?
In what way cruel?
Let me plead for my former friend, Mr. Elliot. Where can you expect a more gentlemanlike, agreeable man?
I have not known Mr. Elliot long. Should he propose to me, which I have very little reason to imagine he has any thought of doing, I shall not accept him.
Not accept Mr. Elliot?
I assure you, Mr. Elliot has not the share you have been supposing in whatever pleasure the concert of last night must afford.
It was not Mr. Elliot, then?
No. Mrs. Smith, from where should you have fancied the idea that I was to marry Mr. Elliot?
It first came into my head upon hearing how much you were together, and all your acquaintances disposed of you in the same way.
That I did not know.
So there is no truth in the news?
There is no truth in my having this claim on Mr. Elliot. but I should be extremely happy to be of use to you in any way I could. Shall I mention to him your being in Bath?
No, I thank you.
I think you spoke of having known Mr. Elliot many years.
I did.
Before he married?
Yes.
And were you much acquainted?
Intimately.
Was he at all such as he appears now?
I had not seen Mr. Elliot these 3 years.
Well, then.
Oh, I beg your pardon, my dear Miss Elliot, for the short answers I have been giving you.
Perhaps you should not speak of anything uncomfortable.
No, I have determined. I think you ought to be made acquainted with Mr. Elliot's real character.
So there is a story to tell.
Mr. Elliot is a man without heart or conscience, a designing, cold-blooded being who thinks only of himself.
My dear Mrs. Smith.
He was the intimate friend of my husband. We were living in very good style. Mr. Elliot was then the inferior in circumstances. My poor Charles would have divided his last farthing with him.
It must have been about the same time that he first became known to my father and sister.
He had been introduced to Sir Walter and your sister before I was acquainted with him.
I should like to know why he should slight my father's acquaintance as he did.
Mr. Elliot, at that period of his life, had one object in view. To make his fortune.
By marriage?
Indeed. Your father and sister were designing a match between himself and your sister Elizabeth, and it was impossible that such a match would have answered his ideas of wealth and independence.
We were not rich enough for him.
That was his motive for drawing back.
Perhaps you sometimes spoke of me to Mr. Elliot.
To be sure I did, very often. I used to boast of my school friend, Anne Elliot.
Ah, this accounts for something which Mr. Elliot said last night. I found he had been used to hear of me, and I could not comprehend how.
It must have been from me.
I beg your pardon, I have interrupted you. Mr. Elliot married, then, completely for money.
I must own I saw nothing reprehensible in what Mr. Elliot was doing.
And the woman he married?
Oh, she was a fine woman. Had a decent education, was brought forward by some cousins, thrown by chance into Mr. Elliot's company, and fell in love with him.
So he was not in love with her?
No. All his caution was spent in being secured of the real amount of her fortune before he committed himself.
I cannot believe it.
You ought to have proof. You shall have proof.
Oh, indeed, my dear Mrs. Smith, I want none.
If you will have the goodness of bringing the small inlaid box, which is on the table there.
This one here?
Yes.
Here.
Ah,
thank you.
Here is a letter written by Mr. Elliot to my husband before our marriage. Dear Smith, at present, believe me, I have no need of your services, being in cash again. Give me joy. I got rid of Sir Walter and Miss.
May I see?
Yes, here.
I wish I had any name but Elliot. Yours truly, William Elliot.
The language, I know, is highly disrespectful, but it shows you the man.
No private correspondence should bear the eye of others. But thank you, this is full proof, undoubtedly.
This is Mr. Elliot as he was a dozen years ago. He is no hypocrite now. He truly wants to marry you. His present attentions to your family are very sincere. Did he not see you last summer or autumn, somewhere down in the West?
He certainly did. At Lyme.
Well, he saw you then at Lyme and liked you so well as to be exceedingly pleased to meet you again in Camden Place as Miss Anne Elliot.
That is possible.
But there was another motive. Mrs. Clay, your sister's friend, has given a general idea among Sir Walter's acquaintance of her meaning to be Lady Elliot.
Go on, Mrs. Smith.
Time has worked a very material change in Mr. Elliot's opinions as to the value of the baronetcy. Now, he cannot bear the idea of not being Sir William. When he heard of Mrs. Clay's intentions, he hastened to Bath with the object of watching Sir Walter and Mrs. Clay.
I'm very glad to know all this. But what of Mr. Elliot's connection with you?
Mr. Elliot led my husband into expenses much beyond his fortune. He was a man of warm feelings and not strong understanding. Led by Mr. Elliot and probably despised by him.
And so accordingly, you were ruined.
Yes. My poor husband died just in time to be spared the full knowledge of it. Mr. Smith appointed Mr. Elliot the executor of his will, but he would not act. And this refusal heaped difficulties and distresses on me.
How could he have been so heartless, so cruel, so unfeeling?
There is one particular circumstance which causes me great agitation. I have good reason to believe that some property of my husband's in the West Indies might be recoverable.
Is this a large property?
No, but it would be enough to make me comparatively rich. Mr. Elliot would do nothing, and I could do nothing myself.
Have you no natural connections to assist you?
No, none at all. And I cannot afford to purchase the assistance of the law. It was on this point that I had hoped I might have engaged your good offices with Mr. Elliot.
I must acknowledge that there was a possibility that I would have been induced to marry him. I might have been persuaded by my friend, Lady Russell, which would then have been most miserable when time had disclosed all too late.
To Anne, it was most distressing to see Mr. Elliot enter her father's drawing-room that evening. Now she saw insincerity in everything he did and said.
And so you were going out of Bath tomorrow?
Yes, very early.
And how long will you be gone for?
Oh, the greater part of 2 days, I fancy. Oh.
Then you must come again to Camden Place the very evening of your return. Friday, will it be?
No, I shall not be back until Saturday evening, Sir Walter.
Delightful. I shall look forward to that, my dear fellow.
Anne, what are your plans for Friday?
On Friday morning, I mean to go very early to visit Lady Russell.
You may as well take back that tiresome book she would lend me and pretend I have read it through. I really cannot be plaguing myself forever with all the new poems and states of the nation that come out.
I shall not tell her so.
You need also not tell her that I thought her dress hideous the other night. I was so ashamed of her at the concert. Oh, my best love to her, of course.
And mine. My kindest regards. If only she would wear rouge, she would not be afraid of being seen.
Oh, I wonder who this is.
We're not expecting anybody. Hi, Charles Musgrove.
Charles.
And Mary, have you arrived to stay? We have not exactly...
We are come to Bath for a few days with Mama, and we are staying at the White Hart.
Well, I'm delighted to see you both. You must sit down and stay as long as you like. Oh, no, first, Mary, you must come into the drawing room and see for yourself how you like our abode at Camden Place.
Yes, my dear. Come along.
Whom does your party consist of, Charles?
Well, there's Mama, Henrietta, Captain Harville, Mary and myself. Mama has some old friends in Bath whom she wanted to see, and it was a good opportunity for Henrietta to come and buy wedding clothes for herself and Louisa.
Are affairs in such forwardness that Henrietta's wedding clothes are to be talked of?
Yes, indeed.
And how has that come about?
Very recently, Charles Hayter was applied to by a friend with a living only 5 and 20 miles from Uppercross, and in a very fine part of Dorsetshire.
Oh, excellent. I hope you think Louisa perfectly recovered now.
Yes, I believe I do. Very much recovered. But she is altered.
In what way?
There is no running or jumping about, no laughing or dancing.
Indeed.
As if one happens only to shut the door a little hard, she starts and wriggles like a young dabchick in the water. And Bennick sits at her elbow reading verses or whispering to her all day long.
That cannot be much to your taste, I know, but I do believe him to be an excellent young man. Bennick has a great deal to say for himself.
When one can but get him to talk.
Charles, do come in here and admire the looking glasses and china. Oh. What handsome drawing rooms.
Elizabeth was suffering a good deal. She felt that Mrs. Musgrove and all her party ought to be asked to dine with them, but she could not bear to have the difference of style, the reduction of servants which a dinner must betray, witnessed by those who had always been so inferior to the Elliots of Kellynch.
I will ask you all for an evening party. I'm sure Mrs. Musgrove has not seen two such drawing rooms before.
Oh, indeed she has not. You will be delighted to come tomorrow evening. It shall be a regular party, small but most elegant.
And you shall meet Mr. Elliot and be introduced to Lady Dalrymple and Miss Carteret, who are already engaged to come.
Do call on Mrs. Musgrove, Elizabeth. Anne, you must come with Charles and myself to see Mrs. Musgrove and Henrietta directly.
It was a morning of thorough confusion. A large party in an hotel ensured a quick-changing, unsettled scene.
A note from Mrs. Musgrove. Mrs. Musgrove?
I have the most magnificent station at a window overlooking the entrance to the pump room. Oh, come, Anne, join me.
A parcel for Captain Harville. Captain Harville?
Anne had not been there above half an hour when a party of steady old friends were seated round Mrs. Musgrove, and Charles came back with Captains Harville and Wentworth. The latter remained at some distance.
I fear from his looks that the same unfortunate persuasion which hastened him away from the concert room still governs. He does not seem to want to be near enough for conversation.
She tried to be calm, leave things to take their course.
Surely, if there be constant attachment on each side, our hearts must understand each other ere long.
Anne!